Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep experience in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity. While huge amounts of money are spent on continuing education, professional development, and other forms of lifelong learning, learning businesses often bump up against beliefs that education and learning should be free or low cost enough to be accessible to all. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
We believe most learning businesses have three goals at heart: reach, revenue, and impact.
Reach deals with clearly identifying who you can and should serve, and then connecting with as many of those identified learners as you can.
Impact is what makes you relevant and effective by delivering significant and real results for learners, organizations, fields, professions, industries.
And revenue is the lifeblood that keeps a learning business alive. And it's the revenue piece of this triumvirate that we want to focus on today in episode 428.
So why pick on revenue? Out of those three, why do we want to focus on revenue today?
Well, I'd say because interestingly, out of those three, it's the one that can get a little bit of pushback, or maybe pushback isn't quite the right word. I think it can just create some discomfort. Very few people are going to disagree that impact and reach are important. Of course, you want to have an impact. Of course, you want to reach the right people. But revenue, you know, you're mixing money and education. It feels a little bit like, I don't know about that, you know?
Right. And maybe part of the reason that we're a little uncomfortable when it comes to education and learning and money is that in the U.S., K through 12, or really even pre-K through 12, is free. And so it may be that we are conditioned from a very early age to perceive of education as free, and then we come to expect that it should be free and open to all. Now, of course, there are private schools all along that pre-K through 12 spectrum, but there is also this free option that exists.
Of course, we might call it the not paid for directly option. Nothing is free, but nonetheless, if you've got a child and you want to put them into the system is there because it has been funded for you to participate.
Right. The kindergartner is not having to fork over
money
out of her own pocket. But yes, it is obviously has to be paid for somehow. But this idea or this association that maybe many of us have between learning and education and low or no cost, that can kind of create some interesting implications for learning businesses and what they can charge for their products and services. I think there can be a lot of downward price pressure because of this idea of free, and don't we want everyone to have access to education? And by making it free, we open up, you know, how many people can benefit from this.
Yeah, and that everyone aspect too, sort of the openness and accessibility of K through 12 education in particular, that also has implications for what learning businesses provide. I think there's this impulse that you want the portfolio to cover the full gamut from beginner to expert and all the subjects and all the topics that might be needed in whatever your particular field or profession is. And you might feel that even more if you have a membership base, you know, within that field and profession that's looking to you for education. But then, of course, trying to offer everything and then trying to offer it for free or even at a very low price just isn't a very viable model in most instances.
Which leads us to the necessity of revenue. Even learning businesses that are organized as nonprofits and learning businesses that maybe offer education as a member benefit, even in those contexts, learning businesses are going to seek to maximize revenue, or maybe we should say we believe they should seek to maximize revenue, because that means more money is there to be put against delivering on the big picture mission of that learning business, whether that's helping to raise the bar in a particular field or profession, or whether it's about, you know, empowering each individual to, you know, attain their highest level of realization. Whatever it is, by having more revenue, you're able to do more of that work.
Yeah. So, I mean, you want to be paid as well as you, you know, reasonably and fairly can for the level of value that you're providing. And of course, we do advocate that learning businesses provide very high value that they are then charging commensurately for. And, you know, and of course, the reality is that education is a big driver of revenue, is a big source of revenue, particularly for the types of organizations that, we're talking to, or, you know, we're talking to learning businesses. This is your businesses. So if you look at associations, for example, a big segment of this learning business world that we serve, education is a huge source of non-dues revenue for those organizations. And of course, it is one that aligns very much with their missions and in serving their members and in serving the fields, professions, industries that they exist to serve.
And then we also look at continuing education units that are housed at academic institutions, those PCO units, professional and continuing and online units that don't tend to grant degrees, but those have become really big business, frankly, for academic institutions. And, you know, one that offers a way for a lot of academic institutions to be making money as they're sort of facing declining enrollments and this enrollment cliff that is being forecast. And so, you know, you have this, again, a sense where that the learning business really is providing a lot of revenue that is helping with the overall organization and its mission.
Yeah. And I think in this case, revenue is helping these organizations, or is perhaps prodding these organizations to rethink their role, or to maybe update how they think about their role and how they think about their strategy. So they're not just that you were providing the higher education for that, you know, 18 to say 25 year old traditional academic degree student, but they are now much more about who is this post-traditional student that we're serving and how do we look at lifelong learning as our role as a college or university. There is money to be made there, but there is also a mission there that is, I think, a good and valid role for colleges and universities to be playing in society.
And then, of course, I think you already touched on it, but if a learning business is freestanding, you know, it's not embedded in that academic institution, it's not embedded in an association, well, in that case, well, then revenue is absolutely 100% necessary, because without that revenue, that learning business doesn't have other sources to keep it going and making it viable and sustainable over time. At Tagoras, we partner with professional and trade associations, continuing education units, training firms, and other learning businesses to help them to understand market realities and potential, to connect better with existing customers and find new ones, and to make smart investment decisions around product development and portfolio management. Drawing on our expertise in lifelong learning, market assessment, and strategy formulation, we can help you achieve greater reach, revenue, and impact. Learn more at tagoras.com/more.
So maybe let's talk about the ways in which revenue flows and produces results. You know, all of this getting and spending that's going on in the education market. How can we break this down a little bit?
Well, for one, we know that employers are spending a lot on training and continuing education and professional development. You know, there's one statistic that the global corporate training market was valued at about $383 billion US dollars in 2023, and it's projected to reach $485 billion by 2028. So really huge numbers. So you have these employers that have these employees, they want them to be able to perform well, to perform better. So they're investing a lot of money in making that happen.
And then, of course, individual learners are spending for themselves as well. You know, another one of those sets of stats that's floating around out there, the U.S. continuing education market is estimated to be worth $93.3 billion by 2028. A lot of Bs we're throwing around here, billions. So these are big markets. And of course, all of that spending is not necessarily individuals, but a lot of it is. And we've seen, you know, the rise of these services like, say, a Udemy. And Udemy is split between, they serve corporate buyers, but they also serve a huge number of individual buyers who are going out to buy that one course they need in that one topic, or masterclass, or just any number of these different providers that are out there. And individuals are pulling out that credit card and investing in these lifelong learning experiences.
So you have the individual learners, you have the employers, you also have a lot of money being spent on workforce development. So a lot of that's coming through governmental agencies or quasi-governmental agencies that are really trying to sort of say, okay, the economy, we need to think about the economy. And a big way to help the economy is to make sure that we have, you know, a workforce that can fill the jobs that are needed to kind of fuel that and have that all running along. So a lot of money is being put in there. One stat we can cite there is that since January of 2021, the Department of Commerce in the U.S. has dedicated more than $1.6 billion. And that goes into things, around workforce investment, including education as a big part of that.
And so all of this, you know, really speaks to that demand side of the equation and classic economics. There is a demand out there for education. There are people, there are organizations, there are governments that are willing to spend this money, that want to spend this money to invest in education and training for a whole range of different needs and purposes, but they are prepared. So if you are in the learning business and need to generate revenue, you've got sources of revenue. But those sources do have expectations.
That's right. I mean, in the simplest terms, we can just say that they're expecting a return on investment. I mean, it's going to cost that learner time, and it's going to usually cost someone some dollars for that training, whether it's the employer paying or that learner paying out of her own pocket. But there's going to be some money spent. And so the learner and the employer have expectations. They have the belief that spending the time and money on this is going to actually create some kind of result. And so I think that that's really important to think about. That gets us back to impact. We talked about reach, revenue, and impact at the beginning. But part of it is that if people are going to put that revenue out there, it needs to come with some impact around it. And I think that expectations are on the rise, given just the proliferation of free or very low cost resources that are out there. So especially if you're trying to charge, which we believe most learning businesses are and should be, and especially if you're trying to charge at any kind of premium level, you're really going to need to make sure that you are delivering value. And you mentioned value earlier, Jeff.
Yeah, and I think we've seen this shift a lot during our careers. I mean, we've been doing this for decades now. And, you know, as you just said, Salisa, there's a lot more competition, a lot more options out there than there used to be. A lot of that's because of what technology has made possible, and both in moving things online, but also in just gaining greater visibility into what's available even offline and being able to set up events and run events and everything that you could traditionally do from an educational standpoint, you can do more and faster now than used to be the case. And of course, we've seen learning evolve. Things are more trackable than they used to be. They're more measurable. We know better what to track and what to measure. And then this employment market and really just life in general these days, the need for learning and the need for knowing that your time is being invested wisely and you are getting that return has just gone up significantly. And it is valued by people. We see this in our own surveying when we ask people about when they decide to invest in paying for an educational opportunity. Like, what are the things, what are the value factors that they're weighing? And one of the top three always is this demonstrated to actually, you know, improve knowledge or skills? Is there some evidence that this is going to do something for me? And then we know that employers, you know, are increasingly concerned about retention and that employees care about this stuff.
Right. LinkedIn does a workplace learning report, one from 2023, talked about the connection between employee retention and access to learning. And so that report from LinkedIn said that 93% of organizations are worried about employee retention. So this is a real concern for the vast majority of organizations. And the number one way that organizations are working to improve retention is by providing learning opportunities.
Yeah, I don't think that's something we're going to see change anytime soon. It's probably just going to get more and more intense over time. So we have this significant demand out there for learning, individuals, organizations, societies willing to invest in it. There is this expectation of return on it. Those two things alone, I think, are positive drivers for revenue. But I think one of the sort of keep people up at night sides of revenue that will often spur organizations to figure out how do we generate more and how do we keep more is just the underlying cost structures of delivering effective learning. And if you're going to generate revenue, if you're going to generate positive net revenue, you have to have an eye on those underlying costs. And that's sort of another element of this kind of the ways in which revenue flows here.
That's right. I mean, you need revenue, but then you need to further understand, okay, out of that revenue, what here is actually, you know, net positive? What is actually profit versus what is just going to cover the costs that went into creating and maintaining and running these learning programs? And in our experience, a lot of learning businesses don't have really great insight into those underlying costs. It can get pretty tricky when you get into things like employee time against a particular offering in your portfolio. And so a lot of learning businesses sort of don't know quite how to allocate salaries against things in their portfolio. And so it can be a challenge to get to those accurate projections, to get to that accurate financial modeling, even on the portfolio level. But by the time you begin trying to break it down into individual products or even product lines, then that begins to get a little bit murky for a lot of learning businesses.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this varies by sort of the type of learning business that you are. Your average commercial training firm might be much more attuned to this than, say, you know, an education department, or maybe just a quasi-education department in, say, a small association where you're part of a, you know, whole mix of other stuff and getting that level of clarity. But increasingly, you know, going back to some of the things we're saying about the expectation of return, the demand that's out there, the competitive environment, if you're going to be serious about revenue, you also have to be serious about this cost side and just really serious about accounting and finance, basically, and being able to do the, you know, roll up your sleeves and create projections and sort of understand how the revenue is playing out within your learning business so that you do have visibility into, you know, is what we're doing sustainable? Is this product line really worth continuing? If we're going to introduce a new product line, what can we reasonably expect from that in terms of both gross and net revenue? And your average education professional may not think of themselves as that sort of financially attuned person, but increasingly, if you're in the learning business and you need to generate revenue and you need to be able to sustain that business, you're going to have to be able to either do those things yourself or make sure you've got good people to do them.
I think it's another facet of return on investment, right? We were talking about the return on investment from the learner point of view, the employer point of view. What you're getting at there, Jeff, is the return on investment from the learning business standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, is this product line, whatever aspect of our portfolio, is that providing a return on our investment? And is it, to your point, sustainable and viable long-term?
Definitely. So we've been talking about kind of the ins and outs of revenue, being clear that the revenue is out there, you know, there is the demand for what learning businesses offer. And I think for me, maybe the bottom line is that strong revenue, strong positive net revenue, I guess I would put it, is freedom. I mean, we deal with so many organizations that are feeling constrained, they're feeling stressed. They're reliant on whether it's a board of directors or some other part of the organization to give them enough budget to do what they need to do. They don't feel like they can hire the staff they want. They don't feel like they can invest in the way they want. When you have strong, positive net revenue, those kinds of problems disappear. You're in a position to invest appropriately in your learning business. And by extension, you're able to serve your learners in the way that I think probably every learning business wants to be able to serve their learners.
So we started out talking about revenue as a necessity that learning businesses needed to survive. We talked about revenue as a reality that there, you know, education is being spent on, that there are, you know, lots of investment, lots of dollars being put against education. And then Jeff, you just got to, I think, the opportunity, right? The opportunity is there that if you can figure out the right approach to revenue and make sure that you're getting the reach and the impact and the revenue, then it's opportunity, you know, gives you that freedom, as you were saying, to be able to do what you need to do to deliver on your mission as a learning business. While huge amounts of money are spent on continuing education, professional development, and other forms of lifelong learning, learning businesses often bump up against beliefs that education and learning should be free or low cost enough to be accessible to all. That creates an interesting tension that we believe is better explored than ignored.
At leadinglearning.com/episode428, you'll find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you haven't yet, please, please subscribe.
We'd be grateful if you would take a minute to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, especially if you enjoy the show. Jeff and I personally appreciate reviews and ratings, and they help the podcast show up when others search for content on leading a learning business.
And please spread the word about Leading Learning. You can do that in a one-on-one conversation or email to a colleague, and you can do it through social media. In the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode428, you'll find links to connect with us on LinkedIn, X, and Facebook.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.